Not had enough of me yet? Well, good news. You can now listen to William Hill's Upfront with Simon Jordan podcast right here. The series, hosted by me, gives you a front row seat to big name interviews discussing their career successes and failures. Sit back and enjoy.
What drives me, and what probably always have driven me, was fear. Then I would get myself into a state where I didn't care if it was Fellaini, for example, pictures of me squaring up to Fellaini. I didn't care how, I just lost complete control. But I was on the back page of a fag thinking, oh my God, what's Arsene going to think? From a mental point of view, probably at that point, I didn't realise how much damage it had done. You could tell straight away when Mikel came in, he was a leader, he was a little bit different. During my whole time, my whole career at Arsenal, there was always that question mark, you know, where's the Vieira? Where's them leaders? Where's the Tony Adams?
This is Upfront with me, Simon Jordan. I believe there are a lot of vacuous, uninformed, unchallenged opinions out there. I want to get to the bottom line and cut through the nonsense. So with this podcast with William Hill, I'm going to get people with strong views who think they can stand them up to proper scrutiny. There's a good chance I might learn something along the way. And more importantly, so might you. Joining me in today's episode, a player who pulled on the famous Arsenal shirt at just 16 years old. He was lauded for his talent, seen as the future for club and country, before injuries took him off course. He saw the final years of Wenger before becoming part of the new era under Mikel Arteta as he begins his coaching career in North London. Jack Wilshere, welcome to Upfront.
Thank you for having me.
Nice to see you, mate.
And you.
On these shows, what we try to do is get a little bit of underneath the bonnet and understand certain aspects of people and some of their background and some of the challenges they've been through. And I'm going to start this one with you, with a sort of retrospective view of yourself, because obviously your career starts very brightly and you're playing for one of the biggest clubs in English football. You're starting very early. You're playing for your country. But it comes to a conclusion, to some extent, prematurely. I mean, ultimately, at 30 years of age, you're retiring. Your Arsenal career comes to an end at 26. When you look back on your own career and reflect on your experiences, what's your takeaway?
Frustration is the first word that comes to my mind. Yes, I finished that at 30, which was early as well. But really, being honest, probably, like you said, when I left Arsenal, I was
26. Yeah,
yeah, I was on the way, certainly on the way down. Struggled a bit at West Ham to find fitness, to find form, and you know, at that point, I looked back and I thought, oh, I should have stayed at Arsenal. They offered me a deal, but probably what I was holding on to is that support around Arsenal. So the physios, the doctor, who I really knew well, who really understood me, and I lost that when I left Arsenal, and that was really sort of the beginning of the end for me.
Do you look at it through a sort of prism of what if? I mean, life throws us curveballs, doesn't it? And it challenges everybody. And you're probably, and we'll talk about this later on, going to go through a period, and probably are going through a period of reinvention. But do you look at it as what if?
No, I think, of course, I think what if. And that's not all the time. I don't walk around.
No, because it's counterproductive.
Yeah, I don't walk around day to day thinking like that. But there's moments where I think what if, and I had one today. I just took a training session with my team and I joined in.
It's under 18s at Arsenal.
Yeah, and I joined in and I had a coach watching who actually brought me to Arsenal. So I brought him back in so he could get a feel for it. And he was like, you could still play. And so I have their moments, you know, like when I join in training and I'm still fit, I'm still young enough where I think, well, I could play. But then I'm sitting here, my ankle's going bang, bang.
Right.
So then that's when you really have their moments.
You're 9 years of age when you land at Arsenal. So you're going into an academy setup about the same time as I'm buying Crystal Palace. You go to Luton first, don't you?
Yeah.
So how do you get to Arsenal? And was it always Arsenal that you wanted to be at? Your mum supports Arsenal, doesn't she?
My mum does, yeah. And I grew up a West Ham fan.
Right, okay.
How did I get to Arsenal? So I was at Luton. Like it was around the time where Luton was a centre of excellence, so they weren't an academy.
Right.
I'd been at Cambridge briefly just before that.
Okay. And at what age? Eight?
Maybe seven, because I think I went to Luton at eight and stayed there till I was nine. And then it was strange, actually, how it happened. So we played a game. I played for Luton, played against Barnet. And the ref was actually the scout. And yeah, he invited me down. And it was actually like a really tough decision for me. Believe it or not, like Luton, it wasn't even an academy, it was a centre of excellence, but it was 15 minutes from my house. It was at that point where academies were introducing, if you played for an academy, you couldn't play for your Sunday league team or your school team and stuff like that. Okay. It might have been a little bit before that.
Yeah, I remember.
But at Luton, I could do that.
Right.
And so I had that like to deal with as well. And I didn't want to leave my mates. And I remember even Arsenal had to pay for me. I think they paid about £1,500 and there was a deadline. I waited right up to the last day to make that decision. Obviously,
must have been a gear change though, going from Luton to London Colney, right?
Well, it was probably more of a gear change for my parents,
right?
More my dad, really, having to get me up there three times a week from Hitchin, which was could have been an hour, could have been 2 hours some days. But yeah, and then in terms of like the detail, the coaching, it was definitely a gear change.
Was it always football for you? Was that always the sport that you wanted to do? There was no others that you excelled in?
No, literally. And I've had players who I played with in my career, and the small things, like they're good at table tennis, they're good at golf. I love golf and I try my hardest, but I'm never going to be good at it. And football was the one thing that it came easy to me, really. It was a natural thing. Like, and even the gear change of going to Arsenal, certain drills the coaches were asking us to do, like it just happened for me. I could just pick it up and naturally I was good at it.
Often when I talk to you guys, being footballers or boxers, sport is often a way out of something. In the boxing world, some people are getting away from the disadvantages of life or the challenges that they've had with their parents and whatever else, being involved in single parent families or in parents that don't have the financial means to be able to support them and the challenges they want to get away from. It doesn't appear that was the case for you. So where were your parents' motivation for you? Did they want you to be a sportsman?
Yeah, no, they were brilliant, and they never stood in my way or never... don't get me wrong, like the punishment would be if you don't do that, you're not playing football.
Right.
But apart from that, they were very supportive.
Were they pushers?
They weren't really pushers, no. Like, and I look back and like, I was thinking about the question and like, don't get me wrong, I didn't grow up poor. Like, I didn't grow up poor, but you know, we grew up in a council, estate council house. And football was like your only sort
an
of
opportunity
thing on the weekend. Yeah. It was free. You know, you didn't have to go anywhere. You didn't have to jump in a car. Like, I had a park at the bottom of my road. And yeah, it was just something that was there and I loved it.
Judging by what you've just said, which is that you pick up things very quickly, it's natural ability that's at the centre of you. And you seem to have excelled at every level. You know, you're playing for the England under-16s when you're 14.
Yeah.
You're in it. You're not at Luton Academy. You're at Arsenal's Academy. I sat here with Michael Owen, who talked about pretty much instantly knew that he was better than most people around him and instantly knew the direction of travel that he was going in and he was going to be something significant. Was your confidence and was your belief like that? Were you cut from that cloth?
No. I just think back and I remember like going to Arsenal and how it worked. Arsenal was you were almost given 2 years and then at the end of that 2 years you were assessed, analysed and yes, another 2 years or not.
Right.
And I always remember...
Well, even at the age of nine?
Yeah.
So you'd have been assessed at 11?
Yeah. Right. I always remember... Actually, I think it was 10, 12, 14.
14, 16, 18,
And I always remember like going into them meetings or that time coming around and just being so nervous. Like,
right.
Not going into it thinking, well, yeah, I know I'm going to get another deal. Especially when I was young, probably when I got to 14 and then you start, you know, at under 14, I was playing in the under 18s and you sort of... On the way.
Yeah.
And then things just happened really quick, Simon. So like, when I went full time, my first pre-season was with the first team because of the Euros, because they had no players, done really well. Then I was in the first team dressing room. But now, in terms of the question, I didn't grow up thinking I'm better than everyone.
How does that chime with observations about your temperament at the time? Because I think Liam Brady talks about you as having... the description he puts in his own words is that you were notoriously hot-headed and you also got yourself into a situation whilst you were away with Arsenal on a youth tournament in Verona where you got sent off in a game. How does that temperament manifest itself?
Yeah.
And how do you look back on it? And do you think that there was a challenge that you had to overcome relatively quickly in order to get yourself into a space where you're going to become a serious, possible professional footballer?
Yeah, and it's hard to look back because I don't think that ever leaves you. Like even now as a coach, I still have that. And I'll reference it with like my players and I speak to them about it a lot. And I'd much rather have someone who's at the top of the spectrum, who's really hot-headed, who really cares, who really wants to win, rather than someone who's not. Because I think it's harder to give someone that and then it's easier to take that down a little bit. And
right.
You're right, I had to learn pretty quickly. I would do anything to win.
Right.
And then I would get myself into a state where I didn't care if it was Fellaini, for example, pictures of me squaring up to Fellaini. I didn't care how, I just lost complete control of who they are, how big they are. I just wanted to win, and I would do anything, try anything. And sometimes I'd cross the line. A lot of the times I would cross the line. But Liam was, even when I got into the first team, Liam was, he was like my mentor almost, and helping me with them situations.
This development of the right mentality, because I've got strong views on academies, and you're in the academy now, and we'll talk about academies later on, and the sort of pivot that you're going through, having been an academy player and now coaching the academy. But how much time and what was the sort of structure put in to helping you finesse that mentality? Because hot-headedness is one thing, desire to win is another. Sort of irresponsibility is a completely different direction, isn't it?
Yeah. You know, and this is something I talk about a lot now working in the academy, like you said. And, you know, back in when I was coming through, we didn't have psychologists, we didn't have life coaches, we didn't have player care and stuff like that. How our mentality was tested was Steve Bold, who was my youth team coach. On certain days, you know, I can remember off the top of my head, on a Tuesday would be like a hard day, and you'd run in the morning and you'd run hard, like really run hard. You didn't have a GPS and a guy saying, no, you can only run this much. You would run until you couldn't run anymore.
Right.
And then in the afternoon, we'd go back out. And if one player didn't do it properly, if they watched back the training, he didn't do it properly.
Oh, let's do it again.
You're running again. Mm. And your mind, Simon, would say, there is no chance I can run. My legs are gone. I came out thinking it's going to be a technical session.
Yeah.
And we're running again. But guess what? You get through it.
Yeah.
And then that would then go, oh my God, like you can actually push your mind to another place and keep going with that. In terms of like helping me with my hot-headedness and stuff, it was just conversations with coaches and coaches' experiences and having to experience it, go through it, you know, go through the time you speak about in Verona. I was 14 playing up in an under 15 competition against the best clubs in Europe.
Yeah.
Liam Brady pulled me before the final and said, look, just stay on the pitch. You're going to get player of the tournament. Well, 10 minutes in against Inter Milan, someone trod on my foot and I just went bang, elbowed him, sent off. And that was a big moment for me because, and this is what I'm talking about now with academies, like now there's so much care. What would that look like? Well, when that happened to me, I walked off the pitch to Liam Brady and he hammered me.
Yeah.
He battered me to the point where I was in tears and walked down the side of the pitch and sat on my own. And that was like, I remember it so much and thinking like that was the learning. That was the moment where.
Well, it's gone the other way
It's gone the other way.
And today's academies, it's gone the other way,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah. Agreed. Yeah.
Yeah. Which do you think is better?
I think there has to be a balance. There has to be a balance. I know it's the easy thing to say. I would tilt more towards my time if I wanted.
Yeah,
I
agree.
If I was coming through, I'd want it to be the way it was when I was.
Because you've got to, I mean, you're going into a difficult sport and you're going into a sport to be a man to some extent. So I always used to say, when I remember walking into Palace and listening to the academy director at the time, a child's life is like an open book. You write a new page on it every day. And I was like, but that's bollocks. Prepare these kids for a very difficult game.
Yeah.
A lot of them are not going to make it, but also they need to have the characteristics to overcome adversity. They need to be told the truth. They need to be looked after, but they also need to be prepared for the challenges. And this idea that you know, every child's life is like an open book, you write a new page. It's lovely and it sounds really good, but you're not preparing these kids to be men.
Mm.
You're not preparing these minnows to be leaders. You're preparing them for failure and the challenges that might overcome them. So it's interesting that you and I think the same way. I mean, we're different generations, but
yeah. I mean, it's really difficult, isn't it? Because the world we live in now, and you know, with mental health, so there for everyone.
Or people's version of it.
Yeah. And I think like it is important that we do speak about that, and I think it's important that the players feel that it's okay to think about that and talk about that, but to a point, you're right.
Not to use it as an excuse. Every time we have adversity in our lives, a challenge, a relationship breaks up, you have a problem, it doesn't mean that you've got a mental health issue. It just means you've had something bad happen. You've got to get some adversity. You've got to get some backbone to get over it, right?
Yeah, no, and I completely agree with that. And the other part is understanding what you're preparing them for.
Yep.
So that's my thing, is how many people within academies, and there's some really, really good people, and there's some really intelligent people that want to learn and want to understand football, but how many actually understand what you're talking about? You know, like, I might release a player, he might have to go into a League Two dressing room. And what does that look like? Mm. Like, I don't even know what that looks like. So have we got people who understand what that looks like and we're preparing them for that? And that's challenges that go on every day in academies.
How influential or visible was Arsene Wenger in perhaps very early in shaping your mentality? Because you're in and around the first team at a very young age.
Yeah, Arsene had like this aura around him, especially with young players, I think, because, you know, the perfect reference for me was Cesc, who was 4 years older than me. So I was 12 at Halen trying to find my way, and he was 16 playing in the team. And Arsene was important for shaping my mentality, but also the coaches there, they gave me a lot of help with, okay, so it was literally, right, you're 12, you've got 4 years to get where Cesc is. We believe in you. How are you going to get there? And then Arsene obviously is the guy who ultimately makes that decision.
You're told as a 12-year-old kid that your pathway is ostensibly to emulate Cesc Fabregas. Mm-hmm. What kind of reaction does that bring out in you at the time?
Inspired me.
Yeah?
Really inspired me, because to have someone like Cesc, and Cesc was eventually my captain, but I don't even think that the coaches would have had to say that to me. Like, just Cesc being in the team and seeing Arsene play him in the big games. I remember him playing the Champions League semi-final against Juventus. Like, in my opinion, all the kids in the academy should have went, oh my God.
But it didn't create a feeling of pressure on you?
No.
Not at all?
No, it didn't. Not really. No, it didn't.
Just inspiration?
Inspired me. Mm.
What's it like? I mean, you get picked at 16 to go into the first team. So you're in the first team dressing room now, and you're looking around, and you've got Carlo Torri, you've got Cesc, as we spoke about, you've got Nasri, you've got William Gallas, Arshavin, Van Persie. This team is 4 years on from being an invincible and a dominant force in English football. As a 16-year-old, what's that dressing room like?
Yeah, do you know, like, and I didn't know this at the time, and I've only learnt it as I've grown up, but what drives me and what probably always have driven me was fear. Like, so the fear of, it could be something like giving the ball away or letting one of them players you're talking about down. Yeah. And that probably held me back a little bit. And it's probably hard to think about holding me back, because as you said, at 16, I made my debut. But in my opinion, at 16, I could have played week in, week out like Cesc did. But that fear, and it can be seen, in my opinion, as a good thing and as a bad thing.
How you channel it is a thing, isn't it?
Yeah. And so initially going in and so I remember it was, as I said, it happened so quick, Simon. Like, it was left school and the first pre-season's out the way. So 6 weeks later, I've got a place in the first team dressing room. Arsene's given me number 19, and I'm sat in there with Nasri, with Gallas, with Cesc. And there were some difficult characters in there. Like Nasri was really good for me. Cesc was really good for me. Bakary Sagna was like a big brother to me and really helped me. And a few others I'm probably forgetting. But then you had the William Gallas, who was difficult. Robin Van Persie, who was...
Difficult in what way?
Well, William hammered me a few times as a young player for giving the ball away. So one of my biggest things, my biggest fears about, you know, playing... I remember FA Cup game, West Ham away. I was only 16, 17, and I played on the left wing. And I gave the ball away a few times, and he absolutely battered me. And I remember thinking, I'm here now. Like, this ain't development. This ain't, okay, you might make a few passes. Don't matter if you lose a game. This is reality. Van Persie just had such high standards. And at that point, I wasn't probably confident enough to try the things he wanted. Mm-hmm. I went on to have a really good relationship with Robin and we played well together, especially for one season. But yeah, going in, there was that little bit of fear around, probably a little bit, am I good enough to be here? And then keep it simple. Don't do anything to piss them off, essentially. And yeah, then just build from there.
It looks to me like that's like a club is in a little bit of decline. You know, you've gone from the dizzy heights of the Invincibles to a club that was dominating English football, being right on the cusp alongside Man United, mm-hmm. for a period of time, and now they're not. Mm-hmm. Did you get that sense? Did you get the feeling? I mean, you've got some winners in the dressing room. You've got Gallas and Van Persie that have won things elsewhere, and that's probably why they held you to such high standards. They're not pricing into the fact you're 16. They don't give a shit you're 16. Yeah. You've got a job to do. You can either do it or you can't, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But did you get the feeling that there's a different feel about this club? There's a different feel of expectation, and I'm categorizing it as decline, but I can't not do it.
Yeah, when
you hit
saying,
the heights of Invincibles,
yeah, it was
any other than that's a decline.
Yeah, it was difficult for me at that time to listen to that, because that was going on, right? And I remember my first preseason, I think it was a preseason where Adebayor left, or it might be my second one, Adebayor, I think Kolo might have left. And I remember we were in Austria, and I was obviously not part of the conversations in the meeting, but I remember Cesc, I remember Robin, might have been Nasri and Gallas, like going to Arsene and saying, look, what's going on? Where are we going with the club?
Really?
Yeah, and I think, like, looking back...
Do you know the response you got?
No, I don't. It probably, like, looking back, done me a favour, really.
Right.
Like, because if they were still Invincibles, would I have got a chance? Maybe not. I think as well, like the during my whole career at Arsenal, there was always that question mark. You know, where's the Vieira, like, where's the Thierry, where's them leaders, where's the Tony Adams? Like, and especially when we started to like threaten to drop out the top four, them questions were always there, and probably rightly so in my opinion. Like, we probably could have done with a Vieira, someone to like grab us in them tough moments and help us through it. Don't get me wrong, we had some leaders in the group, but like a real leader. Cesc, I always reference Cesc, and I know Cesc left after my first year, but my first proper year playing, so he left when I was 19, and that's one of my biggest regrets is not playing with him. But he would lead. He was not afraid to hold people accountable. He would stick it on people and challenge them, probably in the wrong way towards the end, or just before he left to Barca, because he was frustrated, he just wanted to leave.
Frustrated with what?
I think frustrated with what you're saying, the fact that
they weren't at the top of
we're not challenging anymore. Probably didn't look like challenging. It was sort of a period of change with the new stadium, and he was just frustrated.
You break in 2008 and you're 16, and then there's a period where, you know, you're not playing in the first team, and really you break through in 2010, don't you? 2011.
Yes.
And during that course of that season, there's this particular game where you really come to the fore. I mean, you play 49 games in that season.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're beginning to establish yourself now as a first team player and part of the framework of Arsenal and the fabric. And a lot of noise gets made about you, but then a load of noise gets made about you after the game against Barcelona, where, you know, I think you're just lauded and applauded left, right, and centre.
Mm.
Did you see that as the beginning of something for you? Did you look at that and go, that's a standout moment? And I suppose, where does that sort of performance come from? Is it just a performance that's waiting to happen?
Mm.
Because it's a performance that's sort of held in high regard and seen as something that's the beginning of the next great British hope. Here he is, bang, he's landed at Arsenal. He's just dominated a game, changed the direction of it, and being the best player in a country mile, and people like Pep Guardiola are waxing lyrical about him.
I think the reason that people talk about that game so much is probably because Barca were the best team in the world at that point, right? And like, there's always a few games in my career that stand out that I felt like that, and I felt like I played like that. And players would always say, you know, some games things just click, and you try things and they work. So I didn't really feel like that. I remember actually Nasri saying to me after the game exactly what you're saying, right? Come on in now, you've gone to the next level. I remember standing in the tunnel and thinking, oh my God, like, there's Messi, there's Iniesta, there's Xavi, there's Busquets. Like, people, not that I'd grown up watching, I'd watched the year before trying to emulate them. And then I remember the game starting, and actually I didn't start the game well. We didn't start the game well as a team. But then I remember there was like a moment in the game where I made a tackle. I think at the time I didn't even know it was Messi. I took the ball off Messi and I popped past Iniesta. And I remember like, passing it and hearing the crowd like lift and then like looking and thinking, why are they going mad? And because it was Messi and Iniesta. Right. And then I just built on my confidence and the game went on. But even like, I watch it back now, Simon, and I think I could have done things better in that game. But no one talks about the second leg either. We lost the second leg.
Right.
And we went out of the competition, which still to this day, like, Nicholas Bentner had a chance in the last minute and it still haunts me now.
Right.
But it was a good night, and one that I look back on now, and like even my kids, you know, I've got a 12-year-old son, and he's like, oh, you played against Messi.
You get injured later on in that year, in 2011, which takes you out of commission for a period of time. You come back from that injury, and quite a significant amount of that playing squad has been moved on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whether it's Cesc or Robin van Persie. Does that feel like Arsenal are a club that's changing direction, is not on its way up, is either maintaining or in part potentially going backwards?
Well, the truth is it was a completely different team. Like you said, like Cazorla had come in, Mikel had come in.
He was a good player, by the way, Santa Cazorla.
Oh, he was unbelievable. So while we were losing big personalities, big players for the team, we also replaced them. And I felt a weird sense of like leadership there as well. Like I was still only 20, 21. Like, at the time, I didn't think, oh my God, like Cesc's leaving, Robin's leaving, probably because I was injured and I wanted just to get back. But when I look back on that at the end of my career, it probably was like maybe we were maintaining, we were still had quality players, but were we competing for the league? Probably not.
Where were the leaders? I mean, if you're taking Cesc Fabregas out and you're taking Robin van Persie out, whether that's by example or by stature, you're kind of taking some of the leadership out of it. And you mentioned earlier on about we probably could have done a little bit more of that. Where are leaders at that time? Who are the leaders?
So Mikel would come in. Mikel, you could tell straight away when Mikel came in, he was a leader. He was a little bit different. We also brought in Podolski, who was a big personality. And the truth is, we probably lost a little bit of leadership. As I said, I felt a responsibility to be a leader. I think that's what it did as well, actually. Remember like when we signed all the English players and it was like the English core and this is going to be the future of Arsenal. What that did for that group was probably go, right, come on in. This is your time. You have to stand up and be a leader. We fell short in moments.
What does leadership, when you talk about leadership, what does leadership mean to you?
Yeah, I didn't know at that point. And probably I thought I had an understanding and thrown into it. And it was, you know, like...
Was Gallus giving you a bollock in leadership?
No, I didn't think so.
No.
I didn't think so. I think he would have definitely said yes. Like, if you ask him now, like, he wouldn't have done it just to dig me out or make me feel a certain type of way. But I felt like that's probably that generation as well, right? And you could get away with that more back then, and players would respond to that more. What did leadership mean to me as a player? It was standing up and being there, and you know, like that. I don't even now, like, and I see academy football a lot, and I don't see that enough in academies, but even like in the Premier League, like similar to what you said, when things get tough and you have to go through moments, like it doesn't always mean that you're going through a bad time or things are difficult. Yes, it might be, but also sometimes you just got to stand up and face it, like that adversity, that them tough times where, and it was harder at that point at Arsenal because we'd lost leaders. Because then they reference back to Vieira, to the Invincibles, to Tony Adams. And I think like the best form of leadership for them guys was turning up. Yes, holding people accountable as well when they fall below certain standards. But actually just turning up, and when times are hard, being that guy, being the face of it, and trying to lead by example, really.
You mentioned Mikel. And you mentioned the fact that, you know, you pretty much tell straight away that when he came in, he was a leader. And he was your captain for a bit, wasn't he? What was he like as a player, to play alongside?
He was a good player. He technically very, very good. Understanding of the game, very good. Leading, talking. He was kind of different to anything I'd experienced at that point when he came in. I remember when he came in, I was injured. I had one of them boots on, and it was his first day. And I remember him just saying to me, "Oh, how long are you out for, Jack?" And it was literally like that. And I was like, 6 weeks or whatever it was. And he was like, okay, well, you need to hurry up. You need to get back. And like, as little as that might sound, he probably understood that I was a good player and he wanted me back in the team. And no one ever done that really. Then he led by example. He was always on time. All the things you expect from someone like Mikel and being a leader and obviously gone on to do what he's doing.
I look at Arteta now. I don't always concur with some of the things he says, and no one ever does concur with everything, and probably he's not going to be slightly bothered whether I concur with it or not. But he seems to be a very empathetic, very arms around the shoulder, protect everybody at all costs. Was he like that as a player? Was he an encourager? Was he a bollocker? Was he an arms around the shoulder sort of person? I mean, he seems to have related to you pretty quickly about getting back in the side and showing you some attention and paid some interest in you. But when you look back on him and think, well, what was he? Was he the things I'm describing? Which one of them was he?
I think he was a little bit of both. The number one thing that I think about with him is that arm around. He'd be that guy, you know, that sort of Spanish Mediterranean. They're very touchy-feely. Yeah. Come here, give me a cuddle. Yeah. But also I remember him having discussions, heated discussions with other team members, with players. So he can also, and he does as a coach, right? We've seen it with Aubameyang and the all or nothing stuff. He can also be not that guy and he understands that. Yeah. But I think one of his biggest traits that I like about him is I hear empathetic, but it's also, I think he's got a lot of humility, and that's not an easy thing to have, I don't think, as a Premier League
coach. Did he
challenge
managers?
Yes.
He did?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
In what respect? In terms of individual moments, philosophies?
In more individual moments and processes. So I think back to that sort of transition period at Arsenal where we'd gone from invincibles to still challenging to then not really challenging. And just a few things we used to do, and like in terms of what we did in training, did we train? Do we do the right thing before a game in terms of the game plan? Do we do enough analysis? I always remember him being forefront and the guy who would sort of represent the team in that sense.
Wenger at that time talked about top four being a trophy, which is a big departure from the previous Arsenal achievements. Did you, as players, did you believe that getting into the top four was a trophy?
Yeah, being honest, I mean, I think we knew that. We knew that was our level, really. Yeah, like City had just come. They're spending all this money. They'd nicked Nasri. They'd taken Adebayor. United were still there with their Rooney, Vidic, Rio. They weren't going anywhere. And we probably knew that we would fall short if we really, really were honest with ourselves. So like, I don't remember any conversations that between players where we're going, well, why is the gaffer saying that? Like, I don't remember that. And I remember also celebrating finishing the top four like as a success. And it's probably difficult for fans, and I understand that because of the Invincibles, because of how successful.
But for
Arsenal
you guys,
was.
Is that a winning mentality? I mean, you know, you've got a background with people like Gallus that want to win and bollock people, and it's not necessarily the right way to go. You've got Van Persie, who Wenger's let go to Man United. Were you surprised by that, by the way?
Yes. Yeah, a little bit.
Disappointed by it?
Yeah, a little bit disappointed, but also, again, being really honest, like thinking that's probably the pathway that we were on. So we'd lost Nasri, we'd lost Adebayor, we'd lost Cesc. Robin stayed for an extra year, had an unbelievable year. I think he scored 30 goals. And I think he just knew, and we knew, that we weren't going to challenge in the next few years. We weren't going to challenge. We'd obviously got a new stadium and all the pressures that brings.
Because the fan reaction to it was quite extreme, wasn't it? I mean, a fan reaction for Arsenal, you don't see it happen very often, do you? You don't see one of your major competitors take arguably one of your best players.
Mm. I think that's understandable.
But you as players, it's not a mentality I would have thought that you would have enjoyed.
No, and it was disappointing and it hurt. And there was definitely conversations between players that like what's going on. And but one thing Arsene was good at as well, and I don't know if it was that year or a little bit later, but he went and got Ozil, and then all of a sudden we're going, well, we're still wanting to challenge, right, then if we're going to bring these players in. Alexis Sanchez came maybe the year later. Santi came, who was, like as you said, what a player. Mm. So yeah, we lost. I think it was a little bit more hurtful, like personally as players, because we had a relationship with Robin. That's probably the honest truth, where, you know, we'd built something and he was the captain. He was a good leader, in my opinion. He set standards high and very to the point, and he would say it to your face, which I liked. And then for him to leave and go to someone like United, and again, the truth is as well, as much as it hurt, we probably knew that we couldn't challenge anyway. He was going to challenge, and as much as it hurt, as much as we hated it, and as much as it hurt the fans, they went on to win the league the next year. Mm. Robin, so
he made the right choice for him.
Yeah,
talk to me about injuries and you have this fantastic season in 2010-2011. You play 49 times, you have this game that we've discussed where everyone starts waxing lyrical about you, and then you get injured, and it's not a small injury, it's a significant one, which keeps you out for a year.
Mm-hmm.
For you as a player, you're still very young, but notwithstanding it, you're sitting on the sidelines, things have been written about you, and opportunities are awaiting you. And here you are now with a significant injury. What's that period like from both a physical rebuild and a mental approach to it?
Yeah. Physical rebuild was tough. And because I'd played from such a young age, because I'd never had any injuries growing up through the academy, I just played football. And then all of a sudden you're injured and you've got, you still got to go into training, you got to do something. So that you do gym, you do rehab, rightly so. And I was so weak in terms of things I didn't even know that I needed. And it didn't really affect me as a player, but it took a long time to rebuild myself. From a mental point of view, probably at that point, I didn't realize how much damage it had done.
And, in what way?
Well, so after that injury, so that first season, 10-11, I was never the same player. I then played every single day with
physically.
Pain. Physically.
Right. But what about mentally?
Mentally, I was still there, and probably maybe a little bit stronger and grateful and all these words that come to mind, because I'd had and it was a bad injury. It was a career-threatening injury where they hadn't really seen it before. I had to get two surgeons in, and I went from this kid just playing football and loving it every day, and playing in the Champions League, no fear, just let's go. And then all of a sudden, it's taken away from you, and I'm sat in front of two doctors, and they're saying, "Well, yeah, you might never play again." But yeah,
do you think you play too much? Do you think you're 18, 19 that season? You play 49 games. Do you think?
Yeah, probably. But,
do you?
Yeah, but also, Simon, I remember, this was sort of the first year where the GPS came in, and people were saying, they understand it, but they didn't really. And they speak about this red zone. If the player's in the red zone, he's in danger. And I remember having conversations with medical staff, and they're going, "Well, you might need to take your foot off the gas a little bit." I'm going, "What? I'm 18, 19. I'm playing week in, week out in the Premier League.
Yeah,
that's not happening."
Do you not think there's a little bit of responsibility on maybe Arsene and the club to go, young player, manner in which he plays, we're inviting trouble here?
I think it's hard for Arsene that, and because number one, if he'd have come to me and said, which he wouldn't have, because I was playing well and I knew that he'd have wanted me to play. If he'd have come to me and said, "What do you think about missing this?"
You'd have said no, right? Play. Right.
Yeah.
But that's your youth.
Yeah.
And theirs is to be the guiding light to look at it, because short-term gain against long-term loss. You get an instantaneous performance, but then all of a sudden a player gets put in a way of an injury and you've lost him for a year.
Yeah, but it's also like, let's say April or March, April that season, I might have been tired, looking tired, but they couldn't have said, oh, you're going to get an ankle injury or this is going to happen. No, it was just enough. A risk, yeah. A little bit. And I've got to be careful with that because it frustrates the life out of me now with like GPS and everything and like...
It's going too far the other way.
Like there has to be... We have to push players. Mm. And like, you know, I grew up with listening to Beckham, Lampard, Gerrard talking about, you know, it wasn't really the training that made me a player. It was after I went and got 10 balls or I went and
just kept on practicing.
Spent 20 minutes and practice. And we have to be careful not to lose that.
Absolutely. Mm. Do you think the argument rages? I mean, you have said without any blame attribution, because as you probably rightly point out, no one can forecast an ankle injury of the kind that you got. But do you think there's young players these days, because a lot of arguments are being made about Saka and the amount of games that he's playing and other young players and this feeling that they need to be playing in every single game because they can have an impact. Do you think that young players are being played a little bit too much at the moment? I don't, but no, I'm more interested in what you think.
I think they get the balance right, especially with someone like Bukayo and all these players where like what people don't see is he might be managed in the week or he might miss this day or he might not do everything in a training session. And you know, it was actually Eddie Howe who showed me that can work. It was when I went to
Bournemouth.
I went to Bournemouth, like I needed to get away from Arsenal. I weren't playing, I kept getting injuries, and then to go into this new environment and be managed by someone who understood that I've got a lot of quality but I need to be managed right in the week. And he like I said, when I left Arsenal, I was probably done. He was probably the one who prolonged my career in that sense, because I knew that, you know, I didn't have to train on a Wednesday, for example. I could just miss that day and I'd be all right for the weekend. And that was thanks to him.
Observations are made about you that the style of play, the manner in which you held onto the ball, invited challenges, pivoted and rolled away. It's a bit like watching, to some extent, different positions I know, where you watch Jack Grealish and you watch Saka. And they get a lot of challenges. They have the ball, so they're inviting people to tackle them. Do you think that two things, that you could have pivoted and changed a game, and do you think now, if you're playing now, that given the way football's evolved, where almost tackling is almost outlawed, that you might have had a better opportunity not to sustain so many injuries?
I think the first answer is I could have changed the way I played, but then. Would I have been the same player? Would people have respected me for being that little bit different as an English player? You know, one of my biggest frustrations is now as a midfielder, you see so many midfielders get the ball pass sideways, get the ball pass back, and then at the end of the game they go, well, look, he's got 98% pass completion. And that just breaks me all the time, because I see so many moments where I think, well, midfielder can turn and drive. And that was my game. So I probably wouldn't have enjoyed football the way I did. Part of that is probably when I spoke about at the start, like that winning, I just wanted to win and I wanted to do everything I could. And if it was my direct opponent, if it was a 80-20 for him, I'm going into it. Or if I've overrun it and I know that he's going to smash me, but I can nick it away from him, I'd still go for it. So
it's a trade-off for you.
Yeah.
The trade-off is your perception is, if you had modified your game in the interest of prolonging your career, you would have not been the player that you were for the period of time that you were.
Mm-hmm. I think so.
What about the observation of playing in today's game?
Yeah. So I've thought about that a lot recently, because being at Arsenal and learning about Mikel's playing style and, you know, trying to align the under-18s with it. Like I would have loved to have played in the way Mikel sees the game, Pep sees the game, you know, the positional game, because the idea of the positional game is to position yourself between people so you actually never really get in contact. But I love that side of the game, Simon. Like growing up, being in midfield, like winning the battle, like watching players like Roy Keane, Steven Gerrard, like dominating, not just in possession, like out possession, really getting stuck in. And I love that part of the game. So, I mean, I was just thinking, what would I prefer to play now or play when I did? Probably when I did, with a different style.
Right. You talked about, here's a controversial one for you, you're not going to like. You talked about Wenger saying to you about some of the things that you did were unacceptable. And I'm going to ask you a question about your lifestyle outside of the game and whether certain activities and certain behaviours off the pitch, whether it's getting nicked for a fight outside a nightclub or smoking cigarettes or, you know, that sort of activity. Do you think that helped you in your general well-being as a footballer? Did it hold you back from being at the top of your game and detract from things? Because I talk to you now. I mean, I remember sitting there. I'm going to be honest with you. I remember sitting there watching you on that balcony thinking, you're fucking Herbert. What are you doing singing that chant for? And I look at you now and I speak to you now. Well, we're all older and we're wiser. And I don't get that sense from you. I don't get that cocky sort of flash, sort of what you want about, sort of attitude.
Yeah, no, I was really good at separating that, Simon. So I was, honestly, and I never like saying it myself, but I was so dedicated. Like from the age of 9, like changing, making sacrifices. And listen, I loved it and I didn't feel like a sacrifice at the time. And then all of a sudden I got into the first team, got a little bit of money, you know, London nightlife, growing up, like going out in London was never a thing. Like my mum and dad didn't do it, didn't think about it. And then all of a sudden, you know, I've got Sammy Nasri as my mate, lives in London, going to stay at his, we might pop out to a nice restaurant. And my life did change, but I was still very good at separating. If I was going to go out, and I was going to go out and I was going to do it properly, I was going to...
But the smoking fags and sheesh and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, it's the smoking fags thing. Like Arsene, like he was brilliant. I remember like actually really shitting myself for the first time with Arsene when that happened. I was on the back page of a fag thinking, oh my God, what's Arsene going to think? Like, what's he going to say? What's he going to think? And he was unbelievable. He was like, yeah, just make sure that when you're here, you're focused. You know, he actually said, you know, when I was a young player, I used to like sometimes have a fag. And I was like, oh my God, like this is just what I needed to hear. But yeah, like, I don't know. I just feel like I was
really
good
at separating.
What would
you say to young players? Get away from that. Don't be involved in that stuff. Don't allow that representation of yourself.
Yeah. Yeah, of course. Yeah. In hindsight, yeah.
I'm not judging you. I'm asking you because it's part of the things you've done.
Yeah, I'm just trying to think like because I was so good at separating it and also separating. So when I had a fight, when I was arrested and obviously I got then let out on bail, but I was really good at going, okay, that's going on in my life, but football is where it's at and what I want to do. The singing on the balcony, I actually grew
twice.
Up, yeah. So my mum was an Arsenal fan,
yeah.
But all her family was Tottenham fans.
Right.
So I grew up with constant back and forth, like banter. But that I remember just thinking, like, this is a moment that I've been waiting for my whole life. Like my uncle, the biggest Tottenham fan in the world, and I was just going to give him a little bit. And yeah, of course, I regret that because as you said, I looked like a what was the word you use? Herbert. Like a Herbert.
Mate, I've looked like a Herbert 1,000 times. Now, so, you know, there it goes. By the grace of God, go us all. You leave Arsenal at 26 and you go to West Ham. Right, your career at Arsenal, 2 FA Cups.
Yeah.
Yeah. A series of top fours, playing for arguably one of the greatest managers the English football's seen. The situation is that you play 38 games in your last season. And if I'm right, Wenger tells you there's a possibility you're not going to get a new contract.
That was at the beginning of the season.
Beginning of the season, yeah. But you play 38 that game season and your mindset is, I'll prove him wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Right? You're disappointed that you're told by Wenger, someone that's been telling everyone how wonderful you are previously, that you're not going to get a new contract?
No, because I appreciated his honesty at that point. I'd just come back from Bournemouth. I'd broke my leg at White Hart Lane, believe it or not. And then I got married that summer. I had a really good summer. I come back doing my rehab, and I sat in the gym on the bike, literally thinking, what am I doing? Like, what's going on? Okay, I need to get fit. But even then, what's happening? And Arsene just appeared. Didn't even have a meeting. Just appeared and came out of nowhere and said, "Look, almost a little bit like just to let you know, give you the heads up. The club aren't going to offer you a deal. So if you can find a long term deal somewhere,
away you go.
Yeah, away you go."
You appreciated his honesty, but you didn't appear to appreciate Unai Emery's.
Yeah.
Because he's going to give you a contract, yet he tells you, and this is my research telling me this, so you can correct me if I'm wrong, he's going to give you a contract, but he's not going to give you a guarantee that you're going to be in the first team. And that, you have a turn about that.
Actually, why? I did appreciate his honesty because, so how it went was, I then, as you say, got back into the team, had a really good season, and then they offered me a new deal. Now, that deal was heavily based around appearances. Right. And
but you backed yourself, don't you?
I did with Arsene. So the difference was, right, by this point, Arsene had told us as a group he's leaving. Then they offered me a deal. Well, this deal is only a good deal
like a pay and play, yeah,
if you play.
Yeah.
And I don't know who the manager is going to be.
Right.
So I waited.
And he's told you he doesn't want you. If you're not,
so I waited and he arrived day one. And I had a meeting with him and I appreciated his honesty. He actually said, I have to go somewhere where I'm relevant. And I think it was a little bit lost in translation, okay, but
all right,
it was a clear message. And was it hard to leave? No, because of that. Don't get me wrong. All my history and my past with the club meant the world to me and it still does. But, you know, when there's a manager saying, no, you're not going to play, so you have to leave, pretty clear that it was the right moment to go.
Even though they're offering you a contract?
I mean, listen, now I look back and I should have signed a contract. But at that point, it just felt right.
Time for a change.
Time for a change. Arsene was leaving.
Arsene's gone,
the
yeah.
club was going in a different direction. A manager who didn't know me, who I hadn't earned his trust, and potentially I could have earned his trust, but he's also going to want to bring in different players, different midfielders, and he did.
When you leave Arsenal and you go to West Ham, I'm not going to be overly derisory, but your career is winding down. I think we covered this at the beginning, where you accept now, with the benefit of hindsight, not at the time, but at 26 years of age, it would appear now that your best days, sadly, are behind you, and that really, it's like a death of a thousand cuts the next 4 years, isn't it? It's rather than the lights going out for you, it's like the dimmer from hell. It's getting turned down inch by inch, yard by yard. What's that like? I mean, to some people, the acceptance of the lights are off is challenging.
So at the time, obviously, when I went to West Ham, I signed a 3-year deal. I didn't think I'm past it. I just had a really good season with Arsenal.
Yeah.
You know, played in the Europa League semi-final, I think it was, like, had a good season. And, you know, I wanted to go and challenge myself still in the Premier League. I had a few different options. Chose West Ham, obviously. I grew up a West Ham fan, which was probably part of the reason. And probably a little bit naive from me as well, where I'd been at Arsenal and still when I was at Arsenal at that point, it was 65-75% of the time you had the ball.
Yeah.
So you didn't have to run as much. You didn't have to put yourself into challenges as much. And then when I went to West Ham, it was the opposite. 20% of the time, we have the ball. And then the other part of the game, you've got to really pay attention to, especially when you're playing against the big teams. And I probably struggled a little bit with that. What didn't help me, what didn't help Pellegrini, was the first 4 games of that season we lost. And then I got injured, my ankle again, and the next game the team won. So all of a sudden, I'm in a position where I've come into a new club. I'm his signing. I'm earning decent money for this club. And now I'm not fit. And the club are going on to win games. And that was difficult. And as I said at the start, like, I didn't have that support system at West Ham. You know, it was West Ham is a club where you turn up, roll your socks up, and you're going. Like, and they've had success from that, and I think that's why David Moyes has been so successful, because he's really good at that. And I struggled with that a little bit.
When you decide to pack in, right, you obviously West Ham, Bournemouth, you go over to Denmark for a bit, don't you?
Mm-hmm.
And you've decided that's it, right? And you've made that decision. Were you at peace with that? Did you, I'm 30 years of age. You're 30 years of age. You're still a very young man. Were you at peace with that decision?
I was, yeah. I was, but you know what? It happened so quick, Simon. So I was without a club, which kind of gives you a clue.
Yeah.
Went to Bournemouth. They were in the Championship. Played a few games, and Jonathan Woodgate came in, didn't play. Again, sort of gives you a clue. Mm. They didn't offer me a new deal again. Then I had another 6 months where I was without a club. That's when I went back to Arsenal. I was on my A license at that point, and I was trying to stay fit to find a club. And I had a few doubts then, but also I was training with the first team and doing okay. And I was thinking, well, you know, I could still play. Where that will be, I don't know. Got a call from Roy Hodgson about this club in Denmark.
Okay.
He'd put a coach that he'd worked with from Crystal Palace, a guy called Dave Reddington.
I know Dave,
yeah. Top guy. Good coach as well. And he goes, he wants to have a conversation with you. He was an assistant coach there. Spoke to Dave, and straight away I thought, right, I'm going. Don't know why. I'd never played abroad in my life. Had the option to go to Turkey, had the option to go to Italy. Had two young kids with someone who I wasn't with, so that made that a little bit difficult. But at this point, I thought, well, I'm going to go. It's a bit strange. No one really goes to Denmark, but I'm going to go out there. I'm going to play. I'm going to enjoy it. And I did. I went over there, had a great time. In the back of my mind was always sort of that coaching pathway. When do I start it? If I want to be a coach, you know, some of these coaches that I'll be competing against, they started when they were 20. Like, they've got all these years of experience. When am I going to start doing that? And then finished the season in Denmark. It went okay. Like, didn't set the world alight. The standard was okay, but in a standard where I should have been better than I was probably. And I came back, and they actually offered me another year. Had a few other conversations with clubs, but I just thought, Simon, like, I've got four kids. Am I going to go to Cyprus? Am I going to go to Turkey? Am I going to go back to Denmark? Or do I start my coaching? And at that point, I didn't know. And I had a phone call from Per. I was on the golf course, summer 22, saying, look, this role's come up at the club. Are you interested? Are you interested?
Because you're in reinvention mode now. This is a new phase of your life, isn't it? You're out of football as a player. You're economically, I should imagine, okay, because you'd have done all well. So you're without being too crass, you're probably a millionaire coming out of football, maybe a multimillionaire coming out of football. But you're at a crossroads now, aren't you? Because you're only 30 and you've now got to reinvent yourself. I've been down that pathway myself, you know, from being a Premier League football club owner to someone that wiped out £100 million fortune and having to rebuild and relook at things and reevaluate things and find out what it is that I now think is success.
Yeah.
And you're in that space to some extent. So this is a challenging period for you, isn't it? Because you've now gone into coaching. What kind of coach are you?
What types are there?
Well, I'm asking you what kind of coach you think you are.
I'm a coach, I'd like to think, who cares, especially at this point of where I am. So in terms of the journey of the players that I'm coaching now, I really understand their journey, and I would like to think I understand their thought process of where they're at.
Are you technically a good coach?
That's what I'd like to say I am.
Yeah.
I'd like to think so. Like, where, and I need to get better, but I've seen progress.
You're 32, aren't you?
Don't get me wrong. I'm here on a journey that I want to get to there. So there's still loads and loads to do. And also understanding sort of the playing style and my playing style. Mm. I think the more you understand that, then you can start going, well, I'm a technical coach because I know what each phase requires. But I do love it. I do love that side.
What kind of coach is Arteta?
Ooh. You know, Mikel, like, he's so intense, and again, he cares so much, and he's on the grass. He is active. He's taking sessions. He's stopping it and coaching. That's one thing, like, that impressed me so much with Mikel when I went in. So I arsened the majority of my career. Yeah, Eddie was a little bit different. Roy Hodgson was a bit different, but I saw Mikel, like, almost, I'd never experienced coaching like that since the academy. You know, like, stop. Mm. Like, what do you see? And what are the solutions? And, like, really breaking down the game. And he's the best at that, in my opinion. The best at stopping it and seeing and helping the players find solutions.
Do you think Arteta, and try not to give me the company answer, do you think Arteta will lead Arsenal to the promised land? Do you think he'll win the Premier League? Absolutely.
I think he can.
Yeah. Do you think he will?
Yes, eventually. Whether that's this season, whether that's next season, whenever that is, I think the steps that they've made. And the thing is, like, whenever I see Mikel, like, he's getting more and more intense and more passionate and more
By intense, you mean focus, right?
Focus, yeah.
Just not so intense focused. In terms of overbearing and making people uncomfortable, but focused, zeroed in, single-minded, right?
He's focused, and like the Aubameyang thing, he understood that that's probably the best thing for the team, and he's going to go with it.
He was right, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was right. Like, because everyone was going, well, no one's going to catch City, no one's going to catch Liverpool. Now, all of a sudden, we're in the conversation, and we're getting stronger, in my opinion. And yes, there's some hurdles that teams will have to face, and I'm sure we'll have to face them at some point. Like we did last year, we lost a few players with injury and suffered a little bit.
Bottled it.
Suffered because City.
Bottled it.
Okay, City lose Diaz, then in comes Akanji. So
yeah, but notwithstanding that, you had games that you could have won and should have won, and yeah, there were games that were in your jurisdiction, and teams like Southampton and West Ham at that time shouldn't have been giving you the trouble that they did.
But I think,
but you're better now, I think.
Yeah, but bottled it would be if we'd won it the previous year or the year before, or we'd been around it.
Would be you were 6-8 points clear in your own hands and swallowed it.
Yeah, but without any reference or experience of winning that before.
Right.
I wouldn't say we bottled it.
Is your ambition, is it your direction of travel that you're going to be a first team manager?
That's my vision. That's what I want. But I also understand how tough, how long potentially the journey could be.
Yeah.
And then I'm not going to go and jump into a first team when I'm not ready.
Like, no, but it's your ambition.
Yeah.
That's what you're building towards. It doesn't mean that you're not going to do your job properly here and earn your stripes and learn your trade.
No.
But your overriding ambition now, the next phase of the Jack Wilshere story is I would like to do at some point what Mikel Arteta's doing.
Yes.
Good luck.
Thank you.
Thank you for coming in. It's been lovely to see you.
Thank you, Simon.
Thanks for being so upfront.
Thank you.
Upfront with me, Simon Jordan, is brought to you by William Hill. Future episodes can be found on YouTube, Spotify, or wherever you find your podcasts. 18 plus, please gamble responsibly.